Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Gimel Amud Bet by the Mishnah in the new Perek. Perek begins, Kol HaBasar, and right away, Tosafot comment that this Perek seems to be different than all the Perakim that surround it. And that is that we have a standard formula of Baretz u'Bechutz La'aretz b'fnei habayit v'lo b'fnei habayit, b'chulein u'mekdashim, and over here, none of that is wrapping the Mishnah. So Tosafot does point out that Tosefta does say those items that are missing in the Mishnah, and even speculates that the Tosefta, the Braita, is making up for that which is the deficit in the Mishnah or missing from the Mishnah. Although he does quote from the Rashbam that says that the reason that you need to tell this information in the Tosefta is because of the din of Chutz Laretz, that Basar B'Chalav has application in Chutz Laretz. And that's because you might have a Mina, that since there's a Hekesh between Bikurim and Basar B'Chalav, which is found in the Psukim in the Torah of there's a hekesh between Bikurim and Basar B'Chalav, and you might have thought that it only has application inside of Eretz Yisrael, not anywhere else. And therefore, the Tosefta is necessary in order to give us that information, but it is still absent from the Mishnah here in Chulin. Now, Kol HaBasar, Asur LeBashel B'Chalav, any Basar you cannot cook together with Chalav, Chutz MiBasar Dagim B'Chagavim, with the exception of the flesh of fish and the grasshopper and locust, the ones that are kshirim min haTorah, because their basar obviously is not classified like the basar of a behema, and from here in the Mishnah it seems like even a basar of an oaf would be problematic. And that is because lo tefashel gedi b'chalev imo, the Gemara is going to learn later on in this perek that gedi doesn't simply mean a goat, but gedi is a generic term for any behema kshira that is also included under that rubric. And therefore, it's kol basar sur vashel b'chalav, means any behema kshera has that restriction against being cooked together with the chalav of a behema kshera. Basur lalot im agvina al shulchan, and you can't on the same table put out both cheese, milk products, and these meats. Chutz mi basar dagim v'chagavim, once again with the exception of fish and locust. Banuder mina basar, someone takes a neder not to get any benefit from meat. Mutar b'basar dagim v'chagavim, they are allowed to partake in the flesh of fish and locust. And as Rashi notes over here, that when it comes to a neder, we follow what's called lashon b'nei adam, that which is in the parlance of the people of the time. And whatever is meant by the word basar in the colloquial, that's what will be the reference. And so over here, he takes the nether not to eat basar. In the colloquial, that would include basar behema, basar of, but it would not include basar degim vechagavim. Gemara says, ha'of asur midoraita. From our Mishnah, it makes it sound like the basar of an oaf is asur min haTorah. That is because the Mishnah mentions kol basar, and Tosafot quotes from others, but he rejects that kol basar seems to indicate all basar has the same din, with the exception of basar dagim v'chagavim. That would mean that basar of a behema, Torah, a chaya, and an oaf all have the same din of isur basar b'chalav midoraita. The Baalei Tosafot favor saying that it is precipitated not by that kol basar at the beginning of the Mishnah, but from the fact that it's asur lalot im agvina l'shulchan, that one is not allowed to bring onto the table together with the milk, the cheese, any type of basar. As I'm going to see later on in the Gemara, that is a zero. And only if the restriction was a dindo raita, will we have the capacity or necessity to be gozer mi derabanan. But if the whole restriction of oaf and chalav mina Torah was only mi derabanan, then there wouldn't be a necessity to stop or block someone from bringing the gvina onto the shulchan along with the oaf. So therefore, the Mishnah seems to indicate that oaf and chalav are asur midoraita. Kiman, who is that like? Delo k'Rabbi Akiva. Gemara later on Kuf Yud Gimel is going to bring a machloket tanaim as to whether chayan of are subsumed midoraita under the din of lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo, or is that only a restriction midorabanan? Our Mishnah, which seems to say that it's midoraita, is not like Rabbi Akiva. Di Rabbi Akiva amar chayav of eno min haTorah. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that both chayan of are only asurim midrabanan, not midoraita, and therefore he could not be the author of our Mishnah. Ema seifa, what are you going to do with the latter part of the Mishnah? It says, "Anoder mina basar mutar be basar dagim v'chagavim." Ha'of asur oaf would have been subsumed under the word basar in the neder from the structure of the Mishnah. When someone takes the neder not to partake in the basar, then that means not just basar behema, but even basar oaf. Atan the Rabbi Akiva. That follows the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Damar. Komile de mimlach ale shaliach bar minehu. Anything which a shaliach, a proxy, would come and query of the person that had sent him. So if a proxy would come and ask whether this is subsumed under the instructions of the individual who sent them, then that already is classified as being something that is incorporated or encapsulated by that term. Titania, anoder mina yerek, someone who takes a nether not to benefit from any vegetables, mutar bidluim, that person can benefit from gourds, because gourds are not classified as vegetables according to the Chachamim, the Tanakhama. Rabbi Kiva Oser, Rabbi Kiva says that dluim gourds are a subset of yerek. Amru lo the Rabbi Kiva, halo omer adam l'shlucho kach li yerek. Doesn't a individual who wants to purchase vegetables, he sends his messenger into the marketplace and says, please purchase for me vegetables. Omer lo matzati elu dluim. And he comes back and says, I didn't find any vegetables, I only found gourds. So the Rabbanan are pointing out that if it was so obvious that gourds were a subset of vegetables, he wouldn't come back and check with the sender. He would have just purchased the dluim. The fact that he comes back to check with him shows you as evidence of the fact that that's not subsumed under the term yerek. So Amar Lahem, Rabbi Akiva responds to them and says, Kena davar. Exactly what you're saying proves that I am right. Klum omer lo matzati eli kidnit, ela shidluim bichlal yerek. He says that the proxy would never come back and say, I didn't find any vegetables, but I did find legumes in the marketplace, because legumes would never be considered to be subsumed under the term yerek. So he doesn't come and check whether you wanted kidneyt when you sent him to get yerek. Then when you did send him to get yerek, he does check about the luim. The fact that he comes to query about the luim shows you that the luim are bichlal yerek, that some people will subsume the luim under yerek, or there is a possibility of doing such, and therefore Yerek would incorporate within it Luim. Van Kidnit, Bukhal Yerek. But nobody would come and query about Kidnit if you sent them to get Yerek, and therefore for sure Kidnit are not under Yerek. So now you have a situation in which Reisha Rabbanan is Sefer Rabbi Akiva. The Reisha of the Mishnah, which says that Oaf is Midoraita with Basar Bechalav, follows the position of the Rabbanan and not Rabbi Akiva. Whereas the latter half of the Mishnah that speaks about Neder seems to be following the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. And the Balei HaTosafot do point out that in the Gemara Nidarim, and then later on in Me'ilah, it makes it sound like Rabbi Akiva does not believe when you take a Neder about Basar, that automatically Basar Dagim and Chavgavim are excluded from that. And the Gemara tries to come up with all sorts of answers as to why Dagim are precluded. But that implies that in a normal situation, as you can see in the last line of the first Tosafot, Alo Bashar Yamim, Anu Der Mina Basar, Asur Nami B'Dagim, that normally if someone says that they are taking a neder about Basar, Dagim would be subsumed in it. And therefore, either you have to say, similar to the Ukimto that we make in the Gemara Nidarim, you'd have to say the same thing with regards to our Mishnah as to why Dagim were precluded. Or you have to say that the dismissal of this and the position in the Gemara Me'ilah that says that Dagim are subsumed is not a locha, rather a duchia, or it really has to do with the lashon b'nei adam, and time and place will have impact on that, but it is somewhat of a problem because Rabbi Akiva is not clearly in the camp that says the gim is not subsumed under basar. Elim Kain, there's a reason why that person wouldn't eat the gim on that day for medical reasons that the Gemara believes that if you let blood on that day, or if you have some sort of eye ailment, that a person wouldn't eat fish, and that's why basar in that sense only includes basar of poultry and meat. Although, interesting enough today, in the colloquial, if you go to the supermarket and you go to the meat section, it will include both beef and poultry, but fish would be kept in a separate section, nothing to do with halacha, but just to do with the fact that people associate basar with meat and poultry, but they do not do that with regards to dagim. So now the Gemara says we have a Mishnah that seems to have attribution to different authors. So Amar Rav Yosef, Enoch Hanami, Rabbi he. The Masada Mishnah is Rabbi, Venosib Laliba de Tanaim. And he chose which position he liked in the Tanaim. But Nidarim, with regards to Nidarim, Savalak Rabbi Akiva. He thinks Rabbi Akiva's position is better, and therefore he was Sutim like him in our Mishnah. by Basar and Bakalav that Oph is Doraita, Savarlak Yerabonon. He holds like the Rabbonon, and therefore he made their position the default position in our Mishnah. And since the positions are not mutually exclusive, it's fine for Rabbi to put these together, be so tame, like each of those two positions, and take a stand with regards to Nidarim that's different than that of Basar Bakalav. But in Achanami, as Rav Yosef says, there is dual attribution of the Mishnah. On the other hand, Rav Ashi Amar, Kula Rabbi Akiva, the entire Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, V'hachi Kamar. And this is the way you need to read the Mishnah. Kol basar asur levashel bechalav. All basar cannot be cooked together with milk. Mehen midivrei Torah. Some of that meat is problematic min haTorah, u'mehen midivrei sofrim. And some of that meat is problematic only midirabanan. Meaning that beef is problematic midoraita, oof is only problematic midirabanan. But they are asurim. It doesn't tell you the level of isur. The Mishnah is subsuming in that isur, both isurim doraita and isurim derabanan. Chutz mi basar dagim v'chagamim, sheinam lo mi divrei Torah, v'lo mi divrei sofrim. And it excludes from it fish and locusts, which don't have any restriction, not mi derabanan, not mi doraita. And in that way, you can make Rabbi Akiva the author of the entirety of the Mishnah. So now the Gemara moves on to the next part of the Mishnah, Vasur la'alot. You can't put meat and milk together on the table. The obvious problem is that we're worried about individuals sharing or putting things together, and then you can end up unintentionally or accidentally with a problem of bishul basar b'chalav. Now just as background to this, when it comes to basar b'chalav, the Torah says, lo tevashel gidi b'chalev imo, three times. The Gemara concludes in a number of places that the Torah was only oser basar b'chalav derech bishul. So only if one cooks basar b'chalav together is it problematic. Technically, if one ate cold milk and cold meat together, it would never be a problem. They have to be cooked together. Cooked is defined as the transference of flavor between the items. If that happens, then you have a problem of basar b'chalav. There's a restriction both in cooking it, lo tevashel. There's also a restriction in eating it, which is one of the lo tevashels comes to teach us isur achila. And the final lo tevashel comes to teach you there's also an isur hana'a. So sitting together on the table with basar b'chalav inherently is not problematic because there's no bishul going on. So obviously we're dealing here with a gzeira derabanan, and the Gemara here is trying to understand the nature of that gzeira derabanan. Amar Rav Yosef. Shmamina basar of bechalav deoraita. It must be that poultry oof is problematic in cooking it together mina Torah deisakadatcha derabonon, because it was only rabbinic in nature, achila gufa gezeira. That means that eating milk and the poultry together is only a din derabonon, a gezeira otu basar bechalav, then ve'anan nigzor hala atu achila. Then we're going to go and then add on another gzeira, which says, don't eat the fowl together with the milk, because you might come to eat the fowl with the milk. But eating the fowl with the milk is only a din derabanan, otu basar be'ema, the animal meat, together with chalav. And that would be a problem of ein gozrim gzeira l'gzeira, that we don't create double gzeirot mit derabanan. The Gemara says, minat emra, delo gazvina gzeira l'gzeira. Why are you so certain, or how do you know that we're not gozer, gzera the gzera? The Bali of Tosafot over here say, first of all, it's so interesting that the Gemara asked this question here, because in many other places in Shas, the Gemara takes it for granted that you can't make a gzera the gzera. And he says, v'kama mikomot, amar hi gufa gzera, v'antagam nikum minigzor gzera the gzera. The Gemara just asks it as a given, a logical argument. Never demands that we give an explanation for how do you know that that's the case. Just states it as a fact and doesn't even ask and just assumes that it's logical. And here, being in the Tuya Raya. And all of a sudden over here, we have to bring a proof to the fact that you can't be Gozer, Gzer, Gzera. And then there are other places in Shas where the Gemara has no problem making the Gzer, Gzera. And most of the times, the Gemara gives the refrain, Chada Gzera. It's one single Gzera. Or it's an all-encompassing Gzera. Even though it looks like it's two gzerot, it really was one gzera. And the idea being that they have to be gozer, the second gzera, in order to uphold or solidify the first gzera. Therefore, they looked at it as a single gzera, not multiple gzerot. But Tosfot in the end says, Ein ledmot, Zerot Chachamim Zoluzol. Even though it seems to be that all of these should follow the same pattern, we don't have the capacity to compare one Gzera to the other Gzera. We don't know exactly what were the driving forces in each case and why Chazal viewed them differently. Elabim Mekomotcha says Ashas Mindameh. If the Gemara, like in our case, is going to bring cases together, then you can compare and contrast them, because the Gemara told us that those Gzerot are of a similar nature. But otherwise, you can't make that assumption on your own, and you're going to have these different manifestations in Shas, where sometimes the Gemara is going to say, Misvara, you can't have a duplicate Gzera. Other places where it's going to say, no problem, it's a Chad Gzerei. And in some places, or rare places, it's going to say, like in our Gemara, how do you know that you can't make a Gzera to Gzera? The Gemara says, "Bnei Tamarit Delo Gazrin and Gzera Gzera." That's not. We have a Mishnah in Challah that says Challah Chutz La'aretz. When you take off Challah outside of Eretz Yisrael, Nechelat Imazar Al Shulchan. You're allowed to eat it together with a non-Kohen on the Shulchan. V'nitenet L'chol Kohen Shirtze, and you can give it to whichever Kohen you choose to give it to. So it seems that this is a very similar type of Gzera, because noted in that Mishnah is the ability of a Kohen to eat the Chalat Chutz La'aretz on the same table as a Zar, the similar type of Gzerah that we have in our Mishnah, with regards to eating milk and meat at the same table. Now over there, we're dealing with Chalat Chutz La'aretz. We're dealing with Chalat outside of Eretz Yisrael, which is already only Midrabanan. And that Chalat Chutz La'aretz is Otu Chalat of Eretz Yisrael. It's already a Gzerah because of the fact that it is done in order to protect against problems with Chalat Eretz Yisrael, as well as Shaloti Shtakach Torat Chalat, that we don't forget about the din of Chalat in Chutz La'aretz. And for those reasons, we have a Takana of Chalat Chutz La'aretz. But despite that Takana or that Gzerah, we do allow you Nechalat Imazar LeShulchan. You're allowed to eat it together with a non-Kohen on the table, which would not be permitted with Chalat Eretz Yisrael. And on all likelihood, the reason is because we don't allow you to make a Gzera L'Gzera. Now, there's a massive Balei Tosafot over here, and there's much discussion here about Chalat Chutz La'aretz. We're going to postpone the main part of that discussion to the Gemara Nida, where there's more in-depth discussion about the necessity for Chalat Bizman Hazeh, as well as Chalat Chutz La'aretz. But over here, the Balei Tosafot discussed the different degrees of Chalat Chutz La'aretz, and the fact that there are different stages, meaning that there's Eretz Yisrael, where the Chalat would be Midoraita. There is the areas that are Smuchim L'Eretz Yisrael, where you'd have Chalat that is of Chutz La'aretz, but has a higher intensity of Gzerah because of its proximity to Eretz Yisrael. And then there's Chalat Chutz La'aretz, which is the places that are far away from Eretz Yisrael, but there still is a din of Chalat Chutz La'aretz, but it's at a much lower level, including the fact that Chalat Chutz La'aretz, according to the Balei Tosafot, in the end, might not even be Midamat, which means if it got mixed up with Chulin, it wouldn't be a problem. And Tosafot says that maybe they were not Gozer on Tarovet, just like they weren't Gozer on Tarovet Demai, so too they weren't Gozer on Tarovet of Chalat Chutz La'aretz, meaning this way out there, Chutz La'aretz, because she Kalah Kolkach, because it's a very light form of Kiddusha. And the Balei Tosafot then going on to ask, why is it that they were gozer with regards to Chalat Chutz La'aretz and not by Trumot and Masrot? What's so unique about Chalat Chutz La'aretz that makes it that we are noheget the world over, and that's not true by Trumot and Masrot? So Tosafot makes the point that Chalat is something that is everybody touches. It's something that is common to all people, and anybody can be mechayev themselves in the Chalat. Because the kach nirash shebichala yesh lachush yoter shlotish ta kach, you have to be more careful about chala that it shouldn't be forgotten. Mishum de shaychi b'chol adam, it's applicable to all people. Shemigalgel isato, anybody who makes bread, anybody who makes dough. About truma enri galim bo elabale karkaot umamrichei tvuot. But when it comes to trumot and masrot, it's only relevant to people who are landowners, people who are farmers. It's not relevant to all people. By the time of the Balei Tosafot already, you can see the shift in the professions of individuals, where they're shifting away from being tied to land and to farming into other professions. And therefore, it's not everybody who touches on Trumot Masrot. For many people, they are purchasers of these items. Once the Trumot Masrot have already been taken off, or those are the issues for those individuals involved with it. Since it's not something that every person every day is going to be faced with, therefore they didn't make zero to have it extend even out to distant places away from Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz, as opposed to challah, which is something that touches on everybody's life, and therefore they were gozer, shloti tishtakach, torat, challah, in Chutz Laaretz. So now the Mishnah says over here that this challah Chutz Laaretz is necheletim azara l'shulchan, can be eaten together with a non-kohen on the table. V'nitenet, the whole kohen shirtzeh, you can give it to any kohen that you choose. Rashi over here takes that very literally. Afilu l'amaretz, you can even give it to a kohen amaretz, she'en mishamra v'tara. Even though he doesn't worry about tuman tara, you can hand it to a kohen amaretz, which would not be permitted if you were to do that in Eretz Yisrael. The Valei Tosafot think that that's way too far, and that's not what the intention of the Mishnah is. V'en nira l'ri. And he says, L'kach nira l'Rabbeinu Yitzhak, t'holcha mairi, d'leka kohen chaver. You're only permitted to do this when there's no proper kohen around in Chutz Laaretz that you could have given it to. Then you have the permission or the ability to give it to a kohen amaretz. Iname ika kohen chaver shu ashir. Or there's only a kohen chaver that is wealthy, and he doesn't want to take this as a gift. And if he wants to take it as a gift, he doesn't need it. Therefore, we're going to give it to the amaretz ani, because the chalat chutz laaretz will double in sense for matnot aniim, because we have to take care of this amaretz anyway. So we may as well give him this because he is a kohen. So there are kulot with regards to chalat chutz laaretz, but nevertheless, we're not going to let you, l'chatchila, just hand it to an amaretz. It's only when there's no choice, only when there's some other mitigating factor that allows you to do it, which in Eretz Yisrael we wouldn't even consider, which means that if there was no kohen chaver in Eretz Yisrael, we wouldn't permit you to give it to the kohen amaretz. You'd have to wait until you found a kohen chaver. And even if he was wealthy and the amaretz was poor, you're still going to give it to him. That's the way that the Reed learns it, that it's not just permitted carte blanche to give it to whoever you want, but rather you have to try to give it to the proper kohen. In cases where that's not possible, or there are other mitigating factors, we will allow you to give it to a kohen amaretz. Rashi just says that it's a carte blanche, that you can give it to a kohen amaretz, and we don't worry about tuma at all. So then, Amarle Abaye, Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, that mishnah that you brought, I don't think is necessarily a proof. Bishlamayish minan chalat chutzlaretz baretz. If the Mishnah was speaking about a case of chalat chutzlaretz in Eretz Yisrael, the ikal amigzar mishum chalat aretz do raita. In that case, there would be reason to make a gzera because of chala of Eretz Yisrael, which is do raita. Velo gazrinan. In that sense, we did do a gzera mishum chalat aretz do raita. Ikal amashma mina. Then you can conclude what you said, that ain't gozrim gzera the gzera, in a similar fashion to milk and meat. Ella, but the Mishnah here is speaking about Chutz Laaretz, Mishom Del Mecha LeMigzaru. The reason is that it's not having Gzeira is because there is no reason for the Gzeira. Of a Hocha, by the case of milk and meat, Isharit Leila Suke Ofu Gvina, if we allow him to put fowl and milk or cheese onto the table, Ata Le Suke Basaru Gvina, he's going to end up bringing meat and milk together on the table. Umeichal basar b'chalav del raita. And eating milk and meat together is a Torah problem. So what Abaye is pointing out is that when it comes to chalat chutz laaretz in chutz laaretz, the chance of failure or the chance of a problem arising are so low. The problem of a zar eating together with the kohen at the same table is maybe the zar will eat from the chalah of the kohen. So first of all, if you were to be gozer in that case that they shouldn't eat together, then you're preventing them from coming to a mishap that would only be a mishap midrabanan. So even when they do eat together, all that's saying is that if they do eat together and something happens that wasn't supposed to happen, then at worst, the desire that's at the table ate chalat chutz laaretz was only a din derabanan. So over there, the rabbanon don't need to put in a gzera to prevent something that is already only a gzera derabanan, because it's now a derivative item. Chalat chutz laaretz is only because of chala in Eretz Yisrael, and then if you're going to make gzera in Chutz Laaretz, all you're doing is protecting against a violation of chalat Chutz Laaretz, which is only a violation of the Rabbanan. On the other hand, if you were sitting in Eretz Yisrael, the story would be different. In Eretz Yisrael, if you allowed a zar to sit together with a kohen at a table, even though it was chalat Chutz Laaretz, nevertheless, you allowed him to sit there, that would prove to you that you don't make such a gzera. Because over there, there's another worry, which is if we allow you to put chalat chutzlaretz on the table together with a zar, you're going to also do that with chalat Eretz Yisrael. You're going to make that same mistake with chalat Eretz Yisrael. And when you do such, there could be a violation that ends up within a violation d'oraita. So the fact that the Mishnah tells you in chutzlaretz it doesn't do anything, doesn't prove to you anything about inside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, inside of Eretz Yisrael is similar to the case of basar b'chalav. And that's what Abaye points out, because basar b'chalav, you're right, when it comes to basar of and chalav, there, putting it on the table is only, quote-unquote, gzera l'gzera, because you're trying to protect against them eating the oaf and the basar. But there's also a secondary item, similar to chalav, chutzlaretz in Eretz Yisrael, which is if we allow you to put fowl and milk together on the same table, people will then put basar behema and milk and gvina together on the same table, and that will lead to violations de oraita. So they can't compare the two cases. So therefore, if you brought me a Mishnah that said that even though you were in Eretz Yisrael, chalat chutz laretz, you don't have to worry about eating it together on the table, that would be proof that ain gzirin gzer l'gzera in that situation. But the fact is, you brought us a Mishnah about chalat chutz laretz in chutz laretz, and that's not comparable to the case of basar b'chalav. And therefore, you haven't proven me anything. There could be that oaf and gvina are restricted, like our Mishnah says, and even though it's a din d'rabbanan, because we're speaking about in the face of an issue that is d'oraita. The fear here is not only a fear of the oaf and the gvina, the fear is that the oaf and the gvina are going to lead directly to bringing basar, beima, and gvina on the same table, which can lead or which could precipitate a din d'oraita. Both Rashi and the Bali Tosafot say over here that Rav Sheshet's question is on Rav Yosef's assumption. The fact that we are gozer over here shows you that's a din d'oraita. He's challenging that by saying, sof, even if you bring it onto the table, sonein bitsoneinu, it's cold and cold. And we know that the restriction of basar b'chalav is only derech bishul asra Torah. That means that even if you believe that oaf and chalav are d'oraita, you still end up in a position where you have a gzera l'gzera, because the whole restriction against putting it on the table is mishum achila, is because you're going to eat it together. And here, when you bring it on cold and cold, even if you ate it together, it'd only be a restriction to Rabbanan, not a restriction d'oraita. So even in a situation or a scenario where you think that oaf and chalav is d'oraita, you still have a problem in the formulation of the takana or gzeira in the Mishnah of not putting it together on the table, because it really is still a gzeira l'gzeira. So Amar Abaye, that's not a problem. Gzeira shema yalev de ilfis roteach. It could be that he's bringing it into the table in a hot pot. Sof, the hot pot that he's bringing it to the table in is a kli sheinihu. U kli sheini einu mivashel. And when it comes to a kli sheni doesn't have the capacity to cook. How far we take that kli sheni enu mivashel, even though it might be boleya and polate, it still isn't bishul as far as basar v'chalav is concerned, because you need bishul, and that's what the Torah demands over here. We know it's true here. We know that it's true also by dinei Shabbat, at least with regards to most items that are not kalei habishul. Does that have application across the board, which says kli sheni is never mivashel? Or in this situation, is this just a din in basar b'chalav and a din in Shabbat? Or is this a general din that a kli sheni enu mivashel? And that's a discussion amongst the achronim. But still, in the end, if it's not mivashel, you still end up with having a gzeira about bringing it to the table, up to a gzeira of eating it together, where eating it together is only a din d'rabbanan. When it says, ala gzeira shemi ale b'ilfis rishon, maybe he'll take the hot pot off the stove and bring it to the table. Once he does that, now you have a kli rishon, which can be mivashel, and then you could result in a din d'oraita, and therefore it would not be a gzera l'gzera. And so that would be then supportive of Rav Yosef's contention over here, that it must be that ofen chalav is d'oraita, because otherwise you would end up with a gzera l'gzera, and that would be problematic. Now, the proof that Rav Yosef brought was knocked by Abaye. So he doesn't have a proof to that, but it still would have indicated that it was a gzera l'gzera. And if you do believe that oaf is d'oraita, you can't come up with a scenario where this would only be a gzera and not a gzera l'gzera, where it's brought to the table in a kli rishon, which can't be mivashel, by which if you brought it to the table and then they got mixed up together, it would result in a problem d'oraita. And that's why we wouldn't allow you to bring it to the table, and it would only be a single gzera. Now, Chalat Chutzlaritz may not prove that, but it still would then differentiate that from the case if you thought that Ofen Chalav were Midrabanan, then it would be a Gzera L'Gzera. The question of whether that Gzera L'Gzera is justified over here, like Abayi says, because the problem is not eating the Ofen the Chalav together, but rather, if we allow you to put Ofen Chalav together on the table, you're also going to put Basar and Chalav together on the table, which could have a result that's a problem to Oraita. And therefore, it's not really a Gzera L'Gzera. The institution of the table is not about eating the Ofen the Chalav together, because either you call it a Chad Gzerei, or because the Gzera of not putting Of and Chalav together on the table is not to prevent you eating Of and Chalav together, but rather to prevent you from putting Basar and Chalav together on the table, which could then result in some violation to Oraita, and therefore the Gzera here is directed towards something that's the Oraita, not something the Rabbanan. Okay, now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, which is Of Ole Magvina Ala Shulchan Veinu Nechal. One is allowed to have poultry, fowl, and cheese together, milk together on the same table, but you may not eat them together. Divrei Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel Omrim, lo le, v'lo ne'achal. Not only can you not eat them, you also can't bring them onto the table. Amar Rabbi Yossi, zomi kulei Beit Shammai, umuchumrei Beit Hillel. This is one of the instances in which Beit Shammai is the kula, where they only say you can't eat it, but you can have them at the same table. And the chumrei Beit Hillel says not only can you not eat them together, you can't even bring them on the table together. Beizu shulchan amru, what type of table are we speaking about? Shulchan shulchel alav, on the table upon which you are eating. Because there is the problem where people are using their hands. We weren't talking about an era where there were utensils, and people would use their hands to take from the central, the serving areas and bring it to themselves. And if you have things that are both milk and meat in the serving area, then people are apt to take in whatever is there, put their hand in it, and then put it on their plate. And therefore, they're going to mix up both the basar and chalav if it's accessible to them, because they will forget themselves, or they'll see other people taking from it and feel free to take from it, and they won't make the distinction between one being milk and one being meat, and that's where it's restricted. Aval b'shulchan shesoder alav et ha-tavshil, in the area where you're preparing or setting up the items, notein zeh b'tzad zeh v'eino chosheish, you can put them right next to each other without worrying. So in instance, if you're working in the kitchen, you're working on a countertop, you can put them down next to each other because we're not afraid that you're going to mix them up together, because over there, not everybody's just taking and assuming that whatever's at the table is available to them. Because over there, the person who's working knows that they're keeping the milk and the meat separate, and there's no impetus to bring it together, or there's no accidental bringing them together. Rabbi Yossi, Hainu Taina Kama. Gemara says, what did Rabbi Yossi add that you wouldn't have intuited from the Mishnah itself, which is that Beit Shammai is the Kula, Beit Hillel is the Chumra, and you don't need Rabbi Yossi to tell you that. If you want to tell me that the difference between them is the ability to eat, the Kamar Tamakama, Behalaka Miflegei, that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai argue about whether you can bring it to the table or not, Be'achilo lo plige, but with regards to eating it, everybody agrees you can't eat it, V'amarle Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi comes along to say that's not the limit of their machloket. But Achila Gufa Mikule Beit Shammai Mechume Beit Hillel. Not only do they argue by Halah, they also argue by Achila. And Beit Shammai permits even eating them together. Beit Hillel says you cannot. But not. That's just not the case, because there's a Mishnah in Ediot that says Rabbi Yossi Omer Shisha Dvarim Mikule Beit Shammai Mechume Beit Hillel. There are six items where Beit Shammai is the Kula and Beit Hillel is the Chumra. The truth is that there are many more. These are the six that Rabbi Yossi brings that not everybody else agrees with. And amongst those six are Bezuachad Man. One of them is Of Olai Magvina Ala Shulchan. You're allowed to have fowl on the table together with the cheese with the milk, Ve'enu Ne'achal, but it cannot be eaten together, Divrei Beit Shammai. Bezal Omim, Lo Ole Ve'lo Ne'achal. You can't put it on the table, and you can't eat it. You see over here that Rabbi Yossi is identical to what's found in our Mishnah, and he's not saying anything different or disagreeing with that which is said in our Mishnah. So then what information is Rabbi Yossi adding for us? Gemara says, Ela Hakamash Malan, this is what it's coming to inform us, Man Tanakama, Rabbi Yossi. It's coming to tell us that the Tanakama is Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi's comment in the Mishnah is just giving the attribution to the first part of the Mishnah. The way that Rashi says, it's very interesting, he says, Vatana Shachach, the Tana forgot who was the author of that position. Ve'lo Yizkir Shemo B'tchila. He didn't remember up front his name because of Yizkir Shemo. And then afterwards, he remembered his name, or he then mentioned his name. Seems like either it was added later as an attribution to Rabbi Yossi, or while he was going through the Mishnah, it came to him a little later. Very interesting the way that Rashi formulates it, but maybe it's akin to what we see in other places in Shas, where once the Mishnah was Shkura Befi Beit Midrash, you can't change that format of the Mishnah. Therefore, he had to add something in to give the attribution to Rabbi Yossi. But he wanted to give that attribution to Rabbi Yossi because of Minyona Dioma, Kolomer Davar B'Shem Omro Mevi Gula Deolam. Whoever says over something in the name of the originator of the item brings redemption to the world. Shenamar, the evidence of that is from the story in the Megillah. But Tomer Esther LeMelech B'Shem Mordechai. That when Mordechai informs Esther about Bigdan B'Teresh, when Esther goes and informs the king about this, she says it in the name of Mordechai. And later on, in the Megillah, when they read the Sefer Zichronot to Achashverosh, over there it's written that Mordechai was the one who provided the information, and Achashverosh asked, what tova did we do for this Mordechai? So because Esther had mentioned Mordechai's name, that's what later on precipitates all the events that turn the whole situation from Haman being on top to Mordechai being on top. But that all came about because we said it over in the name of Mordechai. So that's the idea here, that anybody who says something over in the name of the person who said it, may be gula deolam. So therefore the Tana didn't want to leave that out and gave that attribution to Rabbi Yossi. So Tana Agra Chamua de Rabbi Abba. Agra, the father-in-law of Rabbi Abba, had the following braita. Of ugvina nechalim ba'apikorin. Of and gvina, fowl and milk or cheese, are eaten ba'apikorin. Apikoren comes from a similar etymology as the word hefker, which means that there are no boundaries surrounding this. Now, it's not clear what that means. And Hu Tani La, he brings down this braita, V'amar La, and he explained what that means, Apikoren, that it's a free-for-all, V'lo Netilat Yadayim, or V'lo Kinu Achapeh, which means that you do not need to wash your hands for that, and you do not need to wipe your mouth in order to move from one to the other. Or in this sense, there is no separation between the eating of Of and Gvina. We'll have to discuss that in a minute, what that means exactly. Rabbi Yitzchak Breit Rav Mesharshia Ikla Lebei Rav Ashi. So Rabbi Yitzchak Breit Rav Mesharshia traveled to the house of Rav Ashi. I do like Gvina. They brought him cheese, milk, achal, and he ate it. I do like Bisra. Immediately afterwards, they brought him meat, achal, and he ate it. V'lo Mashayote, and he didn't wash his hands in between. Amri lei, v'hata ane, agra chamua de Rabbi Abba. Don't we have this Tanaic work from Agra, the father-in-law of Rabbi Abba, that of ugvina, nechalim bapikoren, that when it comes to fowl and cheese or milk, they can be eaten without any restraint. And we said the explanation of that no restraint means that you don't need to wash your hands. You do not need to wipe your mouth. But that was limited to of ugvina in basar gvina lo. That's true by fowl, that's not true by meat of animals. And here we're talking about regular basar by you. Amar Lehu, he said back to them, Hani mile belelya, the requirement to wash one's hands is only at night, where you can't see what's on your hands. Since you can't see what's on your hands, we demand that you wash in order to ensure that there's no leftover cheese, milk, or anything residue left on the hands. That's why you have to wash them. Aval biyomuma, when it comes to the daytime where you can see what's on your hands, Hakazino, I can see what's there. I can decide whether I need to wash them or not need to wash them. Zeno Konami, that necessity for washing hands is only applicable during the night, not during the day. During the day it would be applicable if you saw there was something there, but if you don't see anything there, you don't need to wash one's hands. So now Tosafot points out that there is an inconsistency in this little piece of the Gemara, which is the case in Rav Ashi's house, where Rav Yitzchak Breit Rav Mesharshia came. It was a case where he ate milk first, and then he ate the basar after the milk. On the other hand, the case in the braita that's brought by Agra Chamud Rabbi Abba says ofu gvina, which makes it sound like you ate the meat first and then the milk afterwards. So how can the Gemara go ahead and compare a case of milk coming after meat to a case of meat coming after milk? So Tosfot is perplexed by this, and therefore he comes to the conclusion, when the Gemara over here says basar and then gvina, it wasn't really being exact. It really meant to say that this is true about moving from milk to meat. And because the braita brings oaf beforehand, Noka nami hocha basar tchila. That's why it mentions basar tchila. Ubraita nakat of tchila, dafilo of tchila nechal bapikorin. That when it comes to of, it doesn't matter. Meaning that what the Baal Tosfot is suggesting over here is that by fowl, it doesn't matter whether you had the fowl first or you had the cheese or milk first. In neither of those cases is there a necessity to wash one's hands or to wipe one's mouth. The Gemara here with regards to basar is only making that point on one of those two, only unidirectionally, which is if you had gvina, then you would have to wash your hands and wipe your mouth afterwards in order to eat the basar. That's only true at night, not true during the day. But if it was a case where you had basar and then gvina, over there, none of these rules or this din that is mentioned in our Mish and this Gemara are applicable. And therefore, they conclude, and he brings here from the Rabbeinu Tam Mefresh, Ve'en halacha gedolot, dechal basar, if you eat meat, asur lechol gvina, then you can't eat milk or cheese afterwards. Haynu b'lo netila v'kinuach. That's only without doing netilat yadayim and wiping one's mouth. Aval b'netila v'kinuach shari. If you do netilat yadayim and kinuach, then it'd be permissible. Aval gvina mutar lechol basar. But if you have gvina and then you want to eat meat afterwards, you can eat that even without netilah v'kinuach, because the Gemara says over here, during the day, you don't need to do that. And coming up in the Gemara tomorrow, where we're going to discuss waiting between milk and meat, where Ma'ukva used to wait until another Suda in order to eat it, haynu b'lo netilah v'kinuach. That's only because he didn't wash his hands and wipe his mouth. Had he done that, he wouldn't have to wait. Or, the Baal Tosafot suggests that Ma'ukva was just a chumrah be'alma that he kept on himself, but that was not the Ikar Din with regards to this. The Rabbeinu Tam makes a suggestion as to why there might be a distinction between Of and Basar, and that is because Rabbeinu Tam Eferesh Taima Da'agra Mishum Da'of Enu Nidbak Biyadayim U'Bishinayim V'Chanichayim, that it is because chicken in general doesn't get caught on the hands, doesn't get caught in the teeth, and inside, whether you say the gums, the molars, or wherever else in the mouth that it gets stuck, which precipitates the problem or the necessity to wait. And that's why by Basar you need to wait, and by Of you don't need to wait, and that's the Rabbeinu Tam Lashitato that says by Of there's no necessity to wait at all, not whether you have Of first or Gvina first, it's only by Basar, and only when you have Basar first, because the problem Basar is unique to Basar. And that's what gives this distinction between Basar and Of. And then Tosva goes on to question this view of the Rabbeinu Tam, because then how did they ask on Rabbi Yitzchak over here with the guards to Netilat Yadayim, if that's the case, that there's a difference between Basar and then Gvina, Gvina then Basar, why were they questioning him about washing his hands? So the Baal Tosfot make a suggestion that with regards to Netilat Yadayim, it makes no difference whether you had Basar first or Gvina first, you need Netilat Yadayim. By Kinuach, there's a difference between whether you had Basar first where you would need Kinuach, or you had Gvina first where you would not require Kinuach. And then the Baal Tosfot conclude, Ba'alam na'gu shelo lechol Gvina achar Basar klal. General minog of the world is to not eat milk after meat, afilu acharof, even after fowl, not just after basar behema. And even though Agra says over here that of and gvina nechalim b'apikoren, makes it sound like there's no problem at all, says maybe that's because he believes basar of b'chalav is not doraita. But if you do believe that basar of is midoraita, it would have the same din as behema, and Tosfot says, lo kaim alon ochi. We don't paskin that of is midrabban, we paskin that's doraita. That's the view of the Baal Tosafot. There are others, and the halacha, it turns out that that may not be the case. But Tosafot is speculating as to why people wait after of the same way they wait after basar. And even though the case of Rabbi Yitzchak was different than the case of Agra, nevertheless, you can garner that diuk anyway, because Agra applies to of in either direction, but not to basar at all. And that was the question on Rabbi Yitzchak. How was he doing this if Agra's din only applies by Of and doesn't apply by basar? But that means that after Of, you wouldn't have to wait for Gvina at all. And that's what the Baal Tosfot is trying to deal with versus what the common practice seems to be, that people do wait after Of. The Rambam, on the other hand, believes that Agra was only for Gvina before Of. Otherwise, you need to wait 6 hours, and therefore the Rambam paskins that you have to wait 6 hours for Gvina after Of. The Ramban is bothered by that because of the fact that the Pashtuta Gemara is just the opposite. Although the Rashbo in the Torah Tabayit defends that view of the Rambam. Alright, that's just a little flavor in the Baal Tosafot today to what we'll discuss tomorrow with regards to waiting between meat and milk, and milk and meat. So Gemara continues and says, Tanya, Beit Shammai omrim, mikaneach, Beit Hillel omrim, midiach. That between basar and gvina, according to Rabbeinu Tam, or according to the Baalei HaTosafot and the Ramban, between milk and meat. Beit Shammai says you must do kinuach, which Rashi calls kinuach hapeh, that you have to wipe your mouth. Beit Hillel omrim, midiach, that you have to wash out or rinse out with water in order to clean up. My mikaneach, or my midiach. What exactly is this requirement of mikaneach and midiach? Ilema Beit Shammai omrim mikaneach velo bai midiach. If you think Beit Shammai means you wipe the mouth, but you don't need to rinse off, and as Rashi says over here, because b'mayim shekinuach yafeh min hadacha, because Beit Shammai believes that kinuach is better than doing hadacha, wiping one's mouth is a better way to deal with it than actually rinsing it off with water and washing with water. And that's why they don't require midiach. Beit Hillel omrim midiach velo bai mikaneach. And Beit Hillel believes that kinuach is not sufficient. You need midiach with mayim, and that is the main way to do it. And you don't need kinuach at all. You can do hadacha at all. Which means that they're exclusively taking to their position. The Beit Shammai saying only mikaneach. And Beit Hillel saying only midiach. And similarly, according to Rashi, the machloket is, which is the better way to deal with it? Beit Shammai says mikaneach is better, and Beit Hillel says midiach is better. The Baalei HaTosafot don't like Rashi's explanation over here, because then the Gemara could have concluded differently in the end, because there's really a fundamental machloket, it seems, about which is better. Therefore, the Baalei HaTosafot favors saying, l'cher nira de pshita le de mesader shas da hadocha adifa me kinuach. Everybody agrees that hadocha is better than kinuach. And one of his proofs is the language that's used by the Gemara over here, which is mekaneach lo bai midiach. It sounds like that if you do kinuach, you don't need to do hadacha. That's not because kinuach is better than hadacha. If he wanted to say that, he would have phrased it as mekaneach lo midiach, and midiach lo mekaneach. You wouldn't say it lo bai. Lo bai makes it sound like that's not necessary over here. But if it was obvious that mekaneach was better, it should just say mekaneach velo midiach. You could have made a statement of fact rather than saying that you don't need to then do the other thing, which makes it sound like the other thing might have properties that are better. It's just that it's not necessary in this situation. So both the wording and the conclusion of the Gemara forces Tosafot in a different direction. And he suggests that everybody agrees that hadacha is better than kinuach. And the explanation over here is that Beit Shammai say that you need mekaneach, and you don't need midiach. Gomar, it's enough. Kinuach's enough. Even though hadacha is better, you just don't need that much cleaning, and therefore kinuach is sufficient. And Beit Hillel says that all you need is midiach, because midiach is a better type of washing, and that's all you need. It's obviously not sufficient with mikaneach, but also if you do midiach, you don't need to do kinuach anymore. Gomar says, if that's the way you want to explain Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that they have exclusive positions. One says mikaneach, one says hadacha, and they don't require the other's requirement, then ha'adama Rabbi Zera, that which Rabbi Zera says, in kinuach peh elo bepat, that wiping one's mouth doesn't mean to wipe the external surface, but wiping one's mouth means to chew on bread or to eat bread, which helps to clean out the palate and clean out the teeth. Come on, is he holding like Beit Shammai? Which doesn't make sense, because why would Rabbi Zera bring a position that's in the name of Beit Shammai if the law is like Beit Hillel? So then why is he explaining that position of Beit Shammai? Ella Beit Shammai omrim mikaneach velo bai midiach. Beit Shammai believes that you do kinuach and you don't need midiach. Beit Hillel omrim af midiach. Not that just you have to do hadacha, but you also do hadacha, which means you need to do kinuach and hadacha. In that way, Rabbi Zera's position is in that of Beit Hillel, saying what type of kinuach does Beit Shammai require, but that's also what Beit Hillel requires. So then, habilei mikulei Beit Shammai umchumrei Beit Hillel. If that's the case, now, Beit Shammai is the kula, because all they require is kinuach, and Beit Hillel is the chumra, because they require kinuach and hadacha. Why isn't it enumerated amongst the list of those situations in which Beit Shammai is the kula in Masechet Ediyot? Ella, it must be Beit Shammai omrim mikaneach lo'edin lamediach. That you have to do a kinuach, and you have to do hadacha. Beit Hillel omrim midiach lo'edin lamekaneach. That you have to do hadacha, and you also have to do kinuach. Or in essence, they agree. Mara marchada, umara marchada. Each one of them said one of the two items that's required. Velo plige. And they don't argue. They both agree that tarvayu beinon, that we need both of them in this situation. And that would mean that you would both need to do rinsing out of the mouth with some form of liquid, which would be hadacha. And then there would be the kinuach, which according to Rabbi Zera means eating something that's hard, something like bread that's more abrasive, that would help to clean out the teeth and the area of the mouth. And then that would be a requirement of kinuach and adakah. We'll speak more about this on tomorrow's daf and give more definition to what exactly is necessitated by kinuach and hadakah. And we're going to stop here 11 lines down on the top of Kufei Amud Aleph.